Asclepius picked up the vial and turned it in the light. His expression became serious, then bewildered.
Wait! Why did I agree to make this?
Piper placed her hand palm up on the desk.
Because we need it to save the world. It's very important. You're the only one who can help us.
Her charm speak was so potent, even Spike the Snake relaxed. He curled around his staff and went to sleep. Asclepius's expression softened, like he was easing himself into a hot bath.
Of course, the god said. I forgot, but you must be careful. Hades hates it when I raise people from the dead. The last time I gave someone this potion, the lord of the underworld complained to Zeus, and I was killed by a lightning bolt. Boom!
Leo flinched.
You look pretty good for a dead guy.
Oh, I got better. That was part of the compromise. You see, when Zeus killed me, my father Apollo got very upset. He couldn't take out his anger on Zeus directly. The king of the gods was much too powerful. So Apollo took revenge on the makers of lightning bolts instead. He killed some of the elder Cyclopes. For that, Zeus punished Apollo quite severely. Finally, to make peace, Zeus agreed to make me a god of medicine, with the understanding that I wouldn't bring anyone else back to life.
Asclepius's eyes filled with uncertainty.
And yet here I am, giving you the cure.
Because you realize how important this is, Piper said. You're willing to make an exception.
Yes.
Reluctantly, Asclepius handed Piper the vial.
At any rate, the potion must be administered as soon as possible after death. It can be injected or poured into the mouth, and there is only enough for one person. Do you understand me?
He looked directly at Leo.
We understand, Piper promised. Are you sure you don't want to come with us, Asclepius? Your guardian is out of commission. You'd be really helpful aboard the Argo too.
Asclepius smiled wistfully.
The Argo. Back when I was a demigod, I sailed on the original ship, you know. Ah, to be a carefree adventurer again.
Yeah, Jason muttered. Carefree.
But alas, I cannot. Zeus will already be quite angry with me for helping you. Besides, the Guardian will reprogram itself soon. You should leave.
Asclepius rose.
Best wishes, demigods. And if you see my father again, please, give him my regrets.
Leo wasn't sure what that meant, but they took their leave. As they passed through the waiting room, the statue of Hygieia was sitting on a bench, pouring acid on her face and singing Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star, while her golden snake gnawed at her foot. The peaceful scene was almost enough to lift Leo's spirits. Back on the Argo II, they gathered in the mess hall and filled in the rest of the crew.
I don't like it, Jason said, the way Asclepius looked at Leo.
Aw, he just sensed my heart sickness,
Leo tried for a smile.
You know, I'm dying to see Calypso. That is so sweet, Piper said. But I'm not sure that's it.
Percy frowned at the glowing red vial that sat in the middle of the table.
Any of us might die, right? So we just need to keep the potion handy.
Assuming only one of us dies, Jason pointed out. There's only one dose.
Hazel and Frank stared at Leo. He gave them a look like, knock it off. The others didn't see the full picture. To storm or fire, the world must fall. Jason or Leo. In Olympia, Nike had warned that one of the four demigods present would die. Percy, Hazel, Frank, or Leo. Only one name overlapped those two lists. Leo. And if Leo's plan was going to work, He couldn't have anybody else close by when he pulled the trigger. His friends would never accept his decision. They would argue. They would try to save him. They would insist on finding another way. But this time, Leo was convinced. There was no other way. Like Annabeth always told them, fighting against the prophecy never worked. It just created more trouble. He had to make sure this war ended, once and for all. "We have to keep our options open," Piper suggested. "We need, like, a designated medic to carry the potion. Somebody who can react quickly and heal whoever gets killed."
"Good idea, Beauty Queen," Leo lied. "I nominate you."
Piper blinked.
"But Annabeth is wiser. Hazel can move faster on Orion. Frank can turn into animals."
"But you've got heart."
Annabeth squeezed her friend's hand.
"Leo's right. When the time comes, you'll know what to do."
"Yeah," Jason agreed. "I have a feeling you're the best choice, Pipes. You're going to be there with us at the end, whatever happens, storm or fire."
Leo picked up the vial.
"Is everyone in agreement?"
No one objected. Leo locked eyes with Hazel.
"You know what needs to happen."
He pulled a chamois cloth from his tool belt and made a big show of wrapping up the physician's cure. Then he presented the package to Piper.
"Okay, then," he said. "Athens tomorrow morning, gang. Be ready to fight some giants."
"Yeah," Frank murmured. "I know I'll sleep well."
After dinner broke up, Jason and Piper tried to waylay Leo. They wanted to talk about what happened with Asclepius, but Leo evaded them.
"I've got to work on the engine," he said,
which was true. Once in the engine room, with only Buford the Wonder Table for company, Leo took a deep breath. He reached into his tool belt and pulled out the actual vial of Physician's Cure, not the Trick of the Mist version he'd handed to Piper. Buford blew steam at him.
"Hey, man, I had to," Leo said.
Buford activated his holographic hedge.
"Put some clothes on!"
"Look, it's got to be this way. Otherwise, we'll all die."
Buford made a plaintive squeal, then clattered into the corner in a sulk. Leo stared at the engine. He'd spent so much time putting it together. He'd sacrificed months of sweat and pain and loneliness. Now the Argo II was approaching the end of its voyage. Leo's whole life, his childhood with Tia Kaida, his mother's death in that warehouse fire, his years as a foster kid, his months at Camp Half-Blood with Jason and Piper, all of it would culminate tomorrow morning in one final battle. He opened the access panel. Festus's voice creaked over the intercom.
"Yeah, buddy," Leo agreed. "It's time."
More creaking.
"I know," Leo said. "Together till the end?"
Festus squeaked affirmatively. Leo checked the ancient bronze astrolabe, which was now fitted with the crystal from Ogygia. Leo could only hope it would work.
"I will get back to you, Calypso," he muttered. "I promised on the River Styx."
He flipped a switch and brought the navigation device online. He set the timer for 24 hours. Finally, he opened the engine's ventilator line and pushed inside the vial of Physician's Cure. It disappeared into the veins of the ship with a decisive thunk.
"Too late to turn back now," Leo said.
He curled on the floor and closed his eyes, determined to enjoy the familiar hum of the engine for one last night. Chapter 37. Reyna.
"Turn back!"
Reyna wasn't keen to give orders to Pegasus, the lord of flying horses, but she was even less keen to get shot out of the sky. As they approached Camp Half-Blood in the pre-dawn hours of August 1st,
she spotted 6 Roman onagers. Even in the dark, their imperial gold plating glinted, their massive throwing arms bent back like ship masts listing in a storm. Crews of artillerists scurried around the machines, loading the slings, checking the torsion of the ropes.
"What are those?" Nico called.
He flew about 20 feet to her left on the dark Pegasus Blackjack.
"Siege weapons," Reyna said. "If we get any closer, they can shoot us out of the sky."
"From this high up?"
On her right, Coach Hedge shouted from the back of his steed Guido.
"Those are onagers, kid! Those things can kick higher than Bruce Lee!"
"Lord Pegasus,"
Reyna said, resting her hand on the stallion's neck.
"We need a safe place to land."
Pegasus seemed to understand. He wheeled to the left. The other flying horses followed. Blackjack, Guido, and 6 others who were towing the Athena Parthenos beneath them on cables. As they skirted the western edge of the camp, Reyna took in the scene. The Legion lined the base of the eastern hills, ready for a dawn attack. The onagers were arrayed behind them in a loose semicircle at 300-yard intervals. Judging from the size of the weapons, Reyna calculated that Octavian had enough firepower to destroy every living thing in the valley. But that was only part of the threat. Encamped along the Legion's flanks were hundreds of auxilia forces. Reyna couldn't see well in the dark, but she spotted at least 1 tribe of wild centaurs and an army of cynocephali, the dog-headed men who'd made an uneasy truce with the Legion centuries ago. The Romans were badly outnumbered, surrounded by a sea of unreliable allies.
"There!"
Nico pointed toward Long Island Sound, where the lights of a large yacht gleamed a 1/4 mile offshore.
"We could land on the deck of that ship. The Greeks control the sea."
Reyna wasn't sure the Greeks would be any friendlier than the Romans, but Pegasus seemed to like the idea. He banked toward the dark waters of the Sound. The ship was a white pleasure craft, 100 feet long, with sleek lines and dark-tinted portals. Painted on the bow in red letters was the name Mi Amor. On the forward deck was a helipad big enough for the Athena Parthenos. Reyna saw no crew. She guessed the ship was a regular mortal vessel anchored for the night, but if she was wrong and the ship was a trap...
"It's our best shot," Nico said. "The horses are tired. We need to set down."
She nodded reluctantly.
"Let's do it."
Pegasus landed on the forward deck with Guido and Blackjack. The 6 other horses gently set the Athena Parthenos on the helipad and then settled around it. With their cables and harnesses, they looked like carousel animals. Reyna dismounted. As she had 2 days ago, when she first met Pegasus, she knelt before the horse.
"Thank you, Great One."
Pegasus spread his wings and inclined his head. Even now, after flying halfway up the east coast together, Reyna could scarcely believe the immortal horse had allowed her to ride. Reyna had always pictured him as a solid white with dove-like wings, but Pegasus's coat was rich brown, mottled with red and gold around the muzzle, which Hedge claimed were the marks where the stallion had emerged from the blood and ichor of his beheaded mother, Medusa. Pegasus's wings were the colors of an eagle's, gold, white, brown, and rust, which made him look much more handsome and regal than plain white. He was the color of all horses, representing all his offspring. Lord Pegasus nickered. Hedge trotted over to translate.
"Pegasus says he should leave before the shooting starts. His life force connects all Pegasi, see? So if he gets injured, all winged horses feel his pain. That's why he doesn't get out much. He's immortal, but his offspring aren't. He doesn't want them to suffer on his account. He's asked the other horses to stay with us, to help us complete our mission."
"I understand," Reyna said. "Thank you."
Pegasus whinnied. Hedge's eyes widened. He choked back a sob, then fished a handkerchief out of his backpack and dabbed his eyes.
"Coach?"
Nico frowned with concern.
What did Pegasus say?
He says he didn't come to us in person because of my message.
Hedge turned to Reyna.
He did it because of you. He experiences the feelings of all winged horses. He followed your friendship with Scipio. Pegasus says he's never been more touched by a demigod's compassion for a winged horse. He gives you the title, Horse Friend. This is a great honor.
Reyna's eyes stung. She bowed her head.
Thank you, Lord.
Pegasus pawed the deck. The other winged horses whinnied in salute. Then their sire launched himself upward and spiraled into the night. Hedge stared at the clouds in amazement.
Pegasus hasn't shown himself in hundreds of years.
He patted Reyna on the back.
You did good, Roman.
Reyna didn't feel like she deserved credit for putting Scipio through so much suffering, but she forced down her feelings of guilt.
Nico, we should check the ship,
she said.
If there's anyone aboard...
Way ahead of you.
He stroked Blackjack's muzzle.
I sense two mortals asleep in the main cabin. Nobody else. I'm no child of Hypnos, but I've sent some deep dreams their way. Should be enough to keep them snoozing until well after sunrise.
Reyna tried not to stare at him. In the last few days, he'd gotten so much stronger. Hedge's nature magic had brought him back from the brink. She'd seen Nico do some impressive things, but manipulating dreams? Had he always been able to do that? Coach Hedge rubbed his hands eagerly.
So when can we go ashore? My wife is waiting.
Reyna scanned the horizon. A Greek trireme patrolled just offshore, but it didn't seem to have noticed their arrival. No alarms sounded, no signs of movement along the beach. She caught a glimpse of Silver Wake in the moonlight, a half mile to the west. A black motorboat was speeding toward them with no running lights. Reyna hoped it was a mortal vessel. Then it got closer, and Reyna's hand tightened on the hilt of her sword. Glinting on the boat's prow was a laurel wreath designed with the letters S-P-Q-R.
The Legion has sent a welcoming committee.
Nico followed her gaze.
I thought the Romans didn't have a navy.
We didn't, she said. Apparently Octavian has been busier than I realized.
So we attack, Hedge said, because nobody's standing in my way when I'm this close.
Reyna counted three people in the speedboat. The two in back wore helmets, but Reyna recognized the driver's wedge-shaped face and stocky shoulders. Michael Cahale.
We'll try to parley, Reyna decided. That's one of Octavian's right-hand men, but he's a good legionnaire. I may be able to reason with him.
The wind swept Nico's dark hair across his face.
But if you're wrong...
The black boat slowed and pulled alongside. Michael called up.
Reyna! I've got orders to arrest you and confiscate that statue. I'm coming aboard with two other centurions. I'd prefer to do this without bloodshed.
Reyna tried to control her trembling legs.
Come aboard, Michael.
She turned to Nico and Coach Hedge.
If I'm wrong, be ready. Michael Cahale won't be easy to fight.
Michael wasn't dressed for combat. He wore only his purple camp shirt, jeans, and running shoes. He carried no visible weapon, but that didn't make Reyna feel any better. His arms were as thick as bridge cables, his expression as welcoming as a brick wall. The dove tattoo on his forearm looked more like a bird of prey. His eyes glittered darkly as he took in the scene. The Athena Parthenos, harnessed to its team of Pegasi, Nico with his Stygian sword drawn, Coach Hedge with his baseball bat. Michael's backup centurions were Layla from the 4th cohort and Dakota from the 5th. Strange choices. Layla, daughter of Ceres, wasn't known for her aggressiveness. She was usually quite level-headed. And Dakota, Reyna couldn't believe the son of Bacchus, the most good-natured of officers, would side with Octavian.
Reina Ramirez Arellano, Michael said, like he was reading from a scroll. Former Praetor.
I am Praetor, Reina corrected. Unless I have been removed by a vote of the full Senate. Is that the case?
Michael sighed heavily. His heart didn't seem to be in his task.
I have orders to arrest you and hold you for trial.
On whose authority?
You know whose.
On what charges?
Listen, Reina. Michael rubbed his palm across his forehead, like it might wipe away his headache.
I don't like this any more than you do, but I have my orders.
Illegal orders.
It's too late for argument. Octavian has assumed emergency powers. The Legion is behind him.
Is that true?
She looked pointedly at Dakota and Layla. Layla wouldn't meet her eyes. Dakota winked, like he was trying to convey a message, but it was hard to tell with him. He might have been twitching simply from too much sugary Kool-Aid.
We're at war, Michael said. We have to pull together. Dakota and Layla have not been the most enthusiastic supporters. Octavian gave them this one last chance to prove themselves. If they help me bring you in, preferably alive, but dead if necessary, then they keep their rank and prove their loyalty.
To Octavian, Reina noted, not the Legion.
Michael spread his hands, which were only slightly smaller than baseball mitts.
You can't blame the officers for falling into line. Octavian has a plan to win, and it's a good plan. At dawn, those onagers will destroy the Greek camp without a single loss of Roman life. The gods should be healed.
Nico stepped in.
You'd wipe out half the demigods in the world? Half the gods' legacy to heal them? You'll tear apart Olympus before Gia even wakes up. And she is waking, Centurion.
Michael scowled.
Ambassador of Pluto, son of Hades, whatever you call yourself, you've been named an enemy spy. I've got orders to take you in for execution.
You can try, Nico said coldly.
The face-off was so absurd it should have been humorous. Nico was several years younger, half a foot shorter, and 50 pounds lighter. But Michael didn't make a move. The veins in his neck pulsed. Dakota coughed.
Reina, just come with us peacefully, please. We can work this out.
He was definitely winking at her.
All right, enough talk.
Coach Hedge sized up Michael Cahale.
Let me take this joker down. I've handled bigger.
Michael smirked at that.
I'm sure you are a brave fawn, but...
Satyr!
Coach Hedge leaped at the Centurion. He brought his baseball bat down with full force, but Michael simply caught it and yanked it away from the coach. Michael broke the bat over his knee. Then he pushed the coach back, though Reina could tell Michael wasn't trying to hurt him.
That's it! Hedge growled. Now I'm really mad!
Coach, Reina warned, Michael is very strong. You'd need to be an ogre or a...
From somewhere off the port side, down at the waterline, a voice yelled, Cahale! What's taking so long? Michael flinched.
Octavian?
Of course it's me, yelled the voice from the dark. I got tired of waiting for you to carry out my orders. I'm coming aboard. Everyone on both sides, drop your weapons.
Michael frowned.
Sir? Everyone? Even us?
You don't solve every problem with a sword or a fist, you big dolt. I can handle these Greekus scum.
Michael looked unsure about that, but he motioned to Layla and Dakota, who set their swords on the deck. Reina glanced at Nico. Obviously something was wrong. She couldn't think of any reason Octavian would be here, putting himself in harm's way. He definitely wouldn't order his own officers to get rid of their weapons. But Reina's instincts told her to play along. She dropped her blade. Nico did the same.
Everyone is disarmed, sir, Michael called.
Good! Yelled Octavian. A dark silhouette appeared at the top of the ladder, but he was much too big to be Octavian. A smaller shape with wings fluttered up behind him. A harpy? By the time Reyna realized what was happening, the Cyclops had crossed the deck in two large strides. He bopped Michael Cahale on the head. The Centurion fell like a sack of rocks. Dakota and Layla backed up in alarm. The harpy fluttered to the deckhouse roof. In the moonlight, her feathers were the color of dried blood.
Strong, said Ella, preening her wings. Ella's boyfriend is stronger than Roman's.
Friends, boomed Tyson the Cyclops. He scooped up Reyna in one arm and Hedge and Nico in the other. We have come to save you. Hooray for us.
Chapter 38. Reyna. Reyna had never been so glad to see a Cyclops, at least until Tyson set them down and wheeled on Layla and Dakota.
Bad Romans.
Tyson, wait, Reyna said. Don't hurt them.
Tyson frowned. He was small for a Cyclops, still a child, really. A little over 6 feet tall, his messy brown hair crusted with salt water. His big single eye the color of maple syrup. He wore only a swimsuit and a flannel pajama shirt, like he couldn't decide whether to go swimming or go to sleep. He exuded a strong smell of peanut butter.
They are not bad? He asked.
No, Reyna said. They were following bad orders. I think they're sorry for that. Aren't you, Dakota?
Dakota put his arms up so fast he looked like Superman about to take off.
Reyna, I was trying to clue you in. Layla and I plan to switch sides and help you take down Michael.
That's right.
Layla almost fell backward over the railing.
But before we could, the Cyclops did it for us.
Coach Hedge snorted.
A likely story.
Tyson sneezed.
Sorry, goat fur. Itchy nose. Do we trust Romans?
I do, Reyna said.
Dakota, Layla, you understand what our mission is?
Layla nodded.
You want to return that statue to the Greeks as a peace offering. Let us help.
Yeah,
Dakota nodded vigorously.
The Legion's not nearly as united as Michael claimed. We don't trust all the auxilia forces Octavian has gathered.
Nico laughed bitterly.
A little late for doubts. You're surrounded. As soon as Camp Half-Blood is destroyed, those allies will turn on you.
So what do we do? Asked Dakota. We have an hour at most until sunrise.
5:52 a.m., said Ella, still perched on the boathouse. Sunrise, Eastern Seaboard, August 1st. Timetables for naval meteorology. 1 hour and 12 minutes is more than 1 hour.
Dakota's eye ticked.
I stand corrected.
Coach Hedge looked at Tyson.
Can we get into Camp Half-Blood safely? Is Melly all right?
Tyson scratched his chin thoughtfully.
She is very round.
But she's okay? Hedge persisted. She hasn't given birth yet?
Delivery occurs at the end of the third trimester, Ella advised. Page 43, The New Mother's Guide to...
I gotta get over there!
Hedge looked like he was ready to jump overboard and swim. Reyna put her hand on his shoulder.
Coach, we'll get you to your wife, but let's do it right. Tyson, how did you and Ella get out to this ship?
Rainbow.
You took a rainbow?
He is my fish pony friend.
A hippocampus, Nico advised.
I see.
Reyna thought for a moment.
Could you and Ella escort the coach back to Camp Half-Blood safely?
Yes,
Tyson said.
We can do that.
Good. Coach, go
Go see your wife. Tell the campers I plan to fly the Athena Parthenos to Half-Blood Hill at sunrise. It's a gift from Rome to Greece, to heal our divisions. If they could refrain from shooting me out of the sky, I'd be grateful.
You got it, Hedge said. But what about the Roman Legion?
That's a problem, Layla said gravely. Those onagers will blast you out of the sky. We'll need a distraction, Reyna said. Something to delay the attack on Camp Half-Blood, and preferably put those weapons out of commission. Dakota, Layla, will your cohorts follow you?
I think so, yes, Dakota said. But if we ask them to commit treason...
It isn't treason, Layla said. Not if we're acting on direct orders from our praetor. And Reyna is still praetor.
Reyna turned to Nico.
I need you to go with Dakota and Layla. While they're stirring trouble in the ranks, trying to delay the attack, you have to find a way to sabotage those onagers.
Nico's smile made Reyna glad he was on her side.
My pleasure. We'll buy you time to deliver the Athena Parthenos.
Dakota shuffled his feet.
Even if you get the statue to the hill, what's to stop Octavian from destroying it once it's in place? He's got lots of firepower, even without the onagers.
Reyna peered up at the ivory face of Athena, veiled beneath camouflage netting.
Once the statue is returned to the Greeks, I think it will be difficult to destroy. It has great magic. It has simply chosen not to use it yet.
Layla bent down slowly and retrieved her sword, keeping her eyes on the Athena Parthenos.
I'll take your word for it. What do we do with Michael?
Reyna regarded the snoring mountain of Hawaiian demigod.
Put him in your boat. Don't hurt him or bind him. I have a feeling Michael's heart is in the right place. He just had the bad luck of being sponsored by the wrong person.
Nico sheathed his black sword.
You sure about this, Reyna? I don't like leaving you alone.
Blackjack whinnied and licked the side of Nico's face.
Gah! Okay, I'm sorry.
Nico wiped off the horse spit.
Reyna's not alone. She's got a herd of excellent Pegasi.
Reyna couldn't help but smile.
I'll be fine. With luck, we'll all meet again soon enough. We'll fight side by side against Gia's forces. Be careful, and Ave Rome.
Dakota and Layla repeated the cheer. Tyson furrowed his single eyebrow.
Who is Ave?
It means Go Romans.
Reyna clapped the Cyclops' forearm.
But by all means, go Greeks, too.
The words sounded strange in her mouth. She faced Nico. She wanted to hug him, but wasn't sure the gesture would be welcome. She extended her hand.
It's been an honor questing with you, son of Hades.
Nico's grip was strong.
You're the most courageous demigod I've ever met, Reyna. I...
He faltered, perhaps realizing he had a large audience.
I won't let you down. See you on Half-Blood Hill.
The sky began to lighten in the east as the group dispersed. Soon, Reyna stood on the deck of the Mia Mor, alone, except for 8 Pegasi and a 40-foot-tall Athena. She tried to steady her nerves, until Nico, Dakota, and Layla had time to disrupt the Legion's attack. She couldn't do anything, but she hated standing around and waiting. Just over that dark line of hills, her comrades in the 12th Legion were preparing for a needless attack. If Reyna had stayed with them, she could have guided them better. She could have kept Octavian in check. Perhaps the giant Orion was correct. She'd failed in her duties. She remembered the ghosts on the balcony in San Juan, pointing at her, whispering accusations.
Murderer. Traitor.
She remembered the feel of the golden saber in her hand as she slashed down her father's specter, his face full of outrage and betrayal.
You are a Ramirez Arellano, her father used to rant. Never abandon your post. Never let anyone in. Above all, never betray your own.
By helping the Greeks, Reyna had done all of those things. A Roman was supposed to destroy her enemies. Instead, Reyna had joined forces with them. She'd left her legion in the hands of a madman. What would her mother say? Bellona, the war goddess. Blackjack must have sensed her agitation. He clopped over and nuzzled her. She stroked his muzzle.
I don't have any treats for you, boy.
He bumped her affectionately. Nico had told her that Blackjack was Percy's usual ride, but he seemed friendly to everyone. He carried the son of Hades without protest. Now he was comforting a Roman. She wrapped her arms around his powerful neck. His coat smelled just like Scipio's, a mixture of fresh-cut grass and warm bread. She let loose a sob that had been building in her chest. As praetor, she couldn't show weakness or fear to her comrades. She had to stay strong. But the horse didn't seem to mind. He nickered gently. Reyna couldn't understand horse, but he seemed to say, "It's all right. You've done well." She looked up at the fading stars.
"Mother," she said, "I haven't prayed to you enough. I've never met you. I've never asked for your help. But please, this morning, give me the strength to do what is right."
As if on cue, something flashed on the eastern horizon, a light across the sound, approaching fast like another speedboat. For one elated moment, Reyna thought it was a sign from Bellona. The dark shape got closer. Reyna's hope turned to dread. She waited too long, paralyzed with disbelief, as the figure resolved into a large humanoid running toward her across the surface of the water. The first arrow struck Blackjack's flank. The horse collapsed with a shriek of pain. Reyna screamed, but before she could move, a second arrow hit the deck between her feet. Attached to its shaft was a glowing LED readout the size of a wristwatch, counting down from 500, 459, 458. Chapter 39, Reyna.
"I wouldn't move, praetor."
Orion stood on the surface of the water, 50 feet to starboard, an arrow knocked in his bow. Through Reyna's haze of rage and grief, she noticed the giant's new scars. His fight with the hunters had left him with mottled gray and pink scar tissue on his arms and face, so he looked like a bruised peach in the process of rotting. The mechanical eye on his left side was dark. His hair had burned away, leaving only ragged patches. His nose was swollen and red from the bowstring that Nico had snapped in his face. All of this gave Reyna a twinge of dark satisfaction. Regrettably, the giant still had his smug smile. At Reyna's feet, the timer on the arrow read 4:42.
"Explosive arrows are very touchy," said Orion. "Once they're embedded, even the slightest motion can set them off. I wouldn't want you to miss the last 4 minutes of your life."
Reyna's senses sharpened. The Pegasi clopped nervously around the Athena Parthenos. Dawn began to break. The wind from the shore brought a faint scent of strawberries. Lying next to her on the deck, Blackjack wheezed and shuddered, still alive, but badly wounded. Her heart pounded so hard she thought her eardrums might burst. She extended her strength to Blackjack, trying to keep him alive. She would not see him die. She wanted to shout insults at the giant, but her first words were surprisingly calm.
"What of my sister?"
Orion's white teeth flashed in his ruined face.
"I would love to tell you she is dead. I would love to see the pain on your face. Alas,
As far as I know, your sister still lives. So do Thalia Grace and her annoying hunters. They surprised me, I'll admit. I was forced into the sea to escape them. For the past few days, I have been wounded and in pain, healing slowly, building a new bow. But don't worry, Preeter. You will die first. Your precious statue will be burned in a great conflagration. After Gia has risen, when the mortal world is ending, I will find your sister. I will tell her you died painfully. Then I will kill her. He grinned. So all is well. 404. Hilla was alive. Thalia and the hunters were still out there somewhere. But none of that would matter if Reyna's mission failed. The sun was rising on the last day of the world. Blackjack's breathing became more labored. Reyna mustered her courage. The winged horse needed her. Lord Pegasus had named her horse friend, and she would not let him down. She couldn't think about the entire world right now. She had to concentrate on what was right next to her. 354. So, she glared at Orion. You're damaged and ugly, but not dead. I suppose that means I'll need the help of a god to kill you. Orion chuckled.
Sadly, you Romans have never been very good at summoning gods to your aid. I guess they don't think much of you, eh?
Reyna was tempted to agree. She had prayed to her mother and been blessed with the arrival of a homicidal giant. Not exactly a ringing endorsement. And yet, Reyna laughed. Ah, Orion. The giant's smile wavered.
You have a strange sense of humor, girl. What are you laughing about?
Bellona has answered my prayer. She doesn't fight my battles for me. She doesn't guarantee me easy victory. She grants me opportunities to prove myself. She gives me strong enemies and potential allies.
Orion's left eye sparkled.
You speak nonsense. A column of fire is about to destroy you and your precious Greek statue. No ally can help you. Your mother has abandoned you, as you abandon your legion.
But she hasn't, Reyna said. Bellona wasn't just a war goddess. She wasn't like the Greek Enyo, who was simply an embodiment of carnage. Bellona's temple was where Romans greeted foreign ambassadors. Wars were declared there, but peace treaties were also negotiated. Lasting peace, based on strength.
301. Reyna drew her knife.
Bellona gave me the chance to make peace with the Greeks and increase the strength of Rome. I took it. If I die, I will die defending that cause. So I say my mother is with me today. She will add her strength to mine. Shoot your arrow, Orion. It won't matter. When I throw this blade and pierce your heart, you will die.
Orion stood motionless on the waves. His face was a mask of concentration. His one good eye blinked amber.
A bluff, he growled. I've killed hundreds like you. Girls playing at war, pretending they are equal to giants. I will not grant you a quick death, Preeter. I will watch you burn the way the hunters burned me.
231. Blackjack wheezed, kicking his legs against the deck. The sky was turning pink. A wind from the shore caught the camouflage netting on the Athena Parthenos and stripped it away, sending the silvery cloth rippling across the sound. The Athena Parthenos gleamed in the early light, and Reyna thought how beautiful the goddess would look on the hill above the Greek camp. It must happen, she thought, hoping the Pegasi could sense her intentions. You must complete the journey without me. She inclined her head to the Athena Parthenos.
My lady, it has been my honor to escort you.
Orion scoffed.
Talking to enemy statues now? Futile. You have roughly 2 minutes of life.
Oh, but I don't abide by your time frame, giant, Reyna said. A Roman does not wait for death. She seeks it out and meets it on her own terms.
She threw her knife. It hit True, right in the middle of the giant's chest. Orion bellowed in agony, and Reyna thought what a pleasing last sound that was to hear. She flung her cloak in front of her and fell on the explosive arrow, determined to shield Blackjack and the other Pegasi, and hopefully protect the mortals sleeping below decks. She had no idea whether her body would contain the explosion, whether her cloak could smother the flames, but it was her best chance to save her friends and her mission. She tensed, waiting to die. She felt the pressure as the arrow detonated, but it wasn't what she expected. Against her ribs, the explosion made only the smallest pop, like an overinflated balloon. Her cloak became uncomfortably warm. No flames burst forth. Why was she still alive?
"Rise," said a voice in her head. In a trance, Reyna got to her feet. Smoke curled from the edges of her cloak. She realized something was different about the purple fabric. It glittered as if woven through with filaments of imperial gold. At her feet, a section of the deck had been reduced to a circle of charcoal. But her cloak wasn't even singed.
"Accept my aegis, Reyna Ramirez Arellano," said the voice. "For today, you have proven yourself a hero of Olympus."
Reyna stared in amazement at the Athena Parthenos, glowing with a faint golden aura. The aegis. From Reyna's years of study, she recalled that the term aegis didn't apply only to Athena's shield. It also meant the goddess's cloak. According to legend, Athena sometimes cut pieces off her mantle and draped them over statues in her temples, or over her chosen heroes, to shield them. Reyna's cloak, which she'd worn for years, had suddenly changed. It had absorbed the explosion. She tried to say something, to thank the goddess, but her voice wouldn't work. The statue's glowing aura faded. The ringing in Reyna's ears cleared. She became aware of Orion, still roaring in pain as he staggered across the surface of the water.
"You have failed!"
He clawed her knife from his chest and tossed it into the waves.
"I still live!"
He drew his bow and fired, but it seemed to happen in slow motion. Reyna swept her cloak in front of her. The arrow shattered against the cloth. She charged to the railing and leaped at the giant. The jump should have been impossibly far, but Reyna felt a surge of power in her limbs, as if her mother, Bellona, was lending her strength. A return for all the strength Reyna had lent others over the years. Reyna grabbed the giant's bow and swung around on it like a gymnast, landing on the giant's back. She locked her legs around his waist, then twisted her cloak into a rope and pulled it across Orion's neck with all her might. He instinctively dropped his bow. He clutched at the glimmering fabric, but his fingers steamed and blistered when he touched it. Sour, acrid smoke rose from his neck. Reyna pulled tighter.
"This is for Phoebe," she snarled in his ear. "For Kinsey, for all those you killed. You will die at the hands of a girl."
Orion thrashed and fought, but Reyna's will was unshakable. The power of Athena infused her cloak. Bellona blessed her with strength and resolve. Not one, but two powerful goddesses aided her. Yet the kill was for Reyna to complete. Complete it, she did. The giant crumpled to his knees and sank in the water. Reyna didn't let go until he ceased to thrash and his body dissolved into seafoam. His mechanical eye disappeared beneath the waves.
His bow began to sink. Reyna let it. She had no interest in spoils of war, no desire to let any part of the giant survive. Like her father's mania, and all the other angry ghosts of her past, Orion could teach her nothing. He deserved to be forgotten. Besides, dawn was breaking. Reyna swam for the yacht. Chapter 40 Reyna. No time for enjoying her victory over Orion. Blackjack's muzzle was foaming. His legs spasmed. Blood trickled from the arrow wound in his flank. Reyna ripped through the supply bag that Phoebe had given her. She swabbed the wound with healing potion. She poured unicorn draft over the blade of her silver pocket knife.
"Please, please," she murmured to herself.
In truth, she had no idea what she was doing, but she cleaned the wound as best she could and gripped the shaft of the arrow. If it had a barbed tip, pulling it out might cause more damage, but if it was poisoned, she couldn't leave it in. Nor could she push it through, since it was embedded in the middle of his body. She would have to choose the lesser evil.
"This will hurt, my friend," she told Blackjack.
He huffed, as if to say, "Tell me something I don't know." With her knife, she cut a slit on either side of the wound. She pulled out the arrow. Blackjack shrieked, but the arrow came out cleanly. The point wasn't barbed. It could have been poisoned, but there was no way to be sure. One problem at a time. Reyna poured more healing potion over the wound and bandaged it. She applied pressure, counting under her breath. The oozing seemed to lessen. She trickled unicorn draft into Blackjack's mouth. She lost track of time. The horse's pulse became stronger and steadier. His eyes cleared of pain. His breathing eased. By the time Reyna stood up, she was shaking with fear and exhaustion. But Blackjack was still alive.
"You're going to be fine," she promised. "I'll get you help from Camp Half-Blood."
Blackjack made a grumbling sound. Reyna could have sworn he tried to say donuts. She must have been going delirious. Belatedly, she realized how much the sky had lightened. The Athena Parthenos gleamed in the sun. Guido and the other winged horses pawed the deck impatiently.
"The battle!"
Reyna turned toward the shore but saw no signs of combat. A Greek trireme bobbed lazily in the morning tide. The hills looked green and peaceful. For a moment, she wondered if the Romans had decided not to attack. Perhaps Octavian had come to his senses. Perhaps Nico and the others had managed to win over the legion. Then, an orange glow illuminated the hilltops. Multiple streaks of fire climbed skyward like burning fingers. The onagers had shot their first volley. Chapter 41 Piper. Piper wasn't surprised when the snake people arrived. All week, she'd been thinking about her encounter with Skyron the bandit, when she'd stood on the deck of the Argo II after escaping a gigantic Destructo turtle and made the mistake of saying, "We're safe." Instantly, an arrow had hit the mainmast, an inch in front of her nose. Piper learned a valuable lesson from that. Never assume you're safe, and never ever tempt the fates by announcing that you think you're safe. So when the ship docked at the harbor in Piraeus on the outskirts of Athens, Piper resisted the urge to breathe a sigh of relief. Sure, they had finally reached their destination. Somewhere nearby, past those rows of cruise ships, past those hills crowded with buildings, they would find the Acropolis. Today, one way or another, their journey would end. But that didn't mean she could relax. Any moment, a nasty surprise might come flying out of nowhere. As it turned out, the surprise was three dudes with snake tails instead of legs.
Piper was on watch while her friends geared up for combat, checking their weapons and armor, loading the ballistae and catapults. She spotted the snake guys slithering along the docks, winding through crowds of mortal tourists who paid them no attention.
Annabeth?
Piper called. Annabeth and Percy came to her side.
Oh, great, Percy said. Dracaeni.
Annabeth narrowed her eyes.
I don't think so. At least, not like any I've seen. Dracaeni have two serpent trunks for legs. These guys just have one.
You're right, Percy said. These look more human on top, too. Not all scaly and green and stuff. So do we talk or fight?
Piper was tempted to say fight. She couldn't help thinking of the story she'd told Jason, about the Cherokee hunter who broke his taboo and turned into a snake. These three looked like they'd been eating a lot of squirrel meat. Weirdly, the one in the lead reminded Piper of her dad, when he'd grown a beard for his role in King of Sparta. The snake man held his head high. His face was chiseled in bronze, his eyes black as basalt, his curly dark hair glistening with oil. His upper body rippled with muscles, covered only by a Greek chlamys, a white wool cloak loosely wrapped and pinned at the shoulder. From the waist down, his body was one giant serpent trunk, about 8 feet of green tail undulating behind him as he moved. In one hand, he carried a staff topped with a glowing green jewel. In his other, he carried a platter covered with a silver dome, like an entree for a fancy dinner. The two guys behind him appeared to be guards. They wore bronze breastplates and elaborate helmets topped with horsehair bristles. Their spears were tipped with green stone points. Their oval shields were emblazoned with a large Greek letter K, Kappa. They stopped a few yards from the Argo II. The leader looked up and studied the demigods. His expression was intense, but inscrutable. He might have been angry or worried or terribly in need of a restroom.
Permission to come aboard.
His rasping voice made Piper think of a straight razor being wiped across a strop, like in her grandfather's barber shop back in Oklahoma.
Who are you?
She asked. He fixed his dark eyes on her.
I am Kecrops, the first and eternal king of Athens. I would welcome you to my city.
He held up the covered platter.
Also, I brought a bundt cake.
Piper glanced at her friends.
A trick?
Probably,
Annabeth said.
At least he brought dessert.
Percy smiled down at the snake guys.
Welcome aboard!
Kecrops agreed to leave his guards above deck with Buford the table, who ordered them to drop and give him 20 push-ups. The guards seemed to take this as a challenge. Meanwhile, the King of Athens was invited to the mess hall for a get-to-know-you meeting.
Please take a seat, Jason offered.
Kecrops wrinkled his nose.
Snake people do not sit.
Please remain standing,
Leo said. He cut the cake and stuffed a piece in his mouth before Piper could warn him it might be poisoned, or inedible for mortals, or just plain bad.
Dang!
He grinned.
Snake people know how to make bundt cake. Kind of orangey with a hint of honey. Needs a glass of milk.
Snake people do not drink milk, Kecrops said. We are lactose-intolerant reptiles.
Me too,
Frank said.
I mean, lactose-intolerant, not a reptile. Though I can be a reptile sometimes.
Anyway, Hazel interrupted, King Kecrops, what brings you here? How did you know we'd arrived?
I know everything that happens in Athens, Kecrops said. I was the city's founder.